Good afternoon again, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dave Sider, and this is Show Me the Way, what I'd like to call it, Welcome to the Queue. And that is a reference to my guest today, Mr. Quentin MacArthur of McQueenie Group, his friends, and I hope everyone, when they're done listening to this, will consider Quentin a friend. We'll refer to Quentin as Q. Quentin is the president of McQueenie Group. He is and has been involved in the growth of his business with some major positive changes through expansion via a device called the merger. He's merged his company with another company, and that is going to be a focal point of our conversations today, both with questions and enlightening answers from Quentin. Quentin, Q, thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. You are nice to have me, Dave.
Let me ask you to start off here. Tell us a little bit about you, your background, K-State, that acronym. What is it? Every Man a Wildcat?
EMAW.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I did not go to a Big Eight school in Kansas, so I appreciate you acquainting me and the listeners to your background at K-State. You came out of school and how you got to the place where you joined McQueenie Group. It's just really, I think, important to let them know a little bit about you to get an idea of what you're all about, because it's going to blend into the business that you're in.
Yeah, so I was, I was destined to be a K-Stater from the get-go. I grew up in Manhattan, and it's funny, I think back and I've got a posse of kids that most of them have gone off to college, and they have all of this studying how they're going to go to what college and all of these analysis and spreadsheets and college visits and all that's the kind of thing. And like I said, I grew up in Manhattan, and I remember graduating from high school thinking, now I wonder what I'm going to do next year. I could go to work or I could go to college. And I said, well, I might as well just go to college, and I guess I'll just go to K-State because that's pretty simple. So that was my analysis of how I ended up at K-State. But anyway, while I was at K-State, I studied construction science. There's a program at K-State that's fairly well-known, construction science, and it helped me get into the construction industry. And I had a little bit of experience in that, working summer jobs and some interest in that. And so that's why I gravitated that direction. So yeah, so I went to K-State, graduated, got out of college, and worked for a contractor for 2.5 years. And I was working outside of Kansas City. I had a desire to get to Kansas City just because that's ultimately where I wanted to live. So I went to look for jobs with contractors. This is in the sort of the late 80s. I went to look for jobs with contractors at that time, and I was not finding anything. Probably more because of the candidate I was versus what the market was. But nonetheless, I ended up working for a company called the McQueenie Lock Company. And that got me to Kansas City, and it had me started me down the path of doing something that I knew nothing about. In fact, I didn't even know it was a profession, and that of a professional salesperson. But didn't care. I just wanted to live in Kansas City. And so that put me in Kansas City. And my boss at the time said, give this a shot. I think you'll be good at it, and do it for a year. And if you don't like it, at least you can go find a job and you're up here in Kansas City. So I took that job with the full idea that I'm doing this for a year and I'm getting the heck out of here. And then the next thing you know, one thing leads to another, and I buy the company in 2004. So I started back in 1988, and I guess I liked the sales thing well enough to stick with it. I guess I was good enough to make a decent living doing it. And so that's how I got to be the owner of the McQueenie Lock Company. 2004, myself and a partner bought the company, and we renamed it at that time McQueenie Group. And that's how I ended up being the boss.
So tell us a little bit about McQueenie Lock, McQueenie Group. What does it actually do? What was it doing back when you first joined, you bought it? What's it doing today?
Yep. So McQueeney Lock and McQueeney Group, we're manufacturers representative in the construction industry. Our niche is the HVAC, heating, ventilating, air conditioning equipment. We serve really all markets that are non-residential, commercial and industrial markets. And our general footprint has been state of Kansas and the western half of Missouri. So and if somebody's listening and doesn't understand what a manufacturer's rep does, we represent 40 or 50 different manufacturers that build things, build equipment that go into mechanical systems. So they build it. They need somebody to go market it and sell it. And so that's what my team does, is represents those particular manufacturers in our geography. And our job is to help our customers apply the equipment. And ultimately, we hope to get a sale out of it. And then we, after the sale, we service those projects.
So the McQueeney Group will deal with mainly commercial or industrial customers.
Correct.
We don't really deal in residential. So those big cooling towers you see on top of buildings and HVAC.
We love cooling towers.
Big HVAC units in big high-rise buildings or industrial buildings. That's really what we're talking about.
Yep. Yeah.
And so you get to walk into those people when they're looking to expand or replace and sit down and have the conversation of what you can bring to the table to help them with cooling and heating, I guess, by definition, both sides of the ledger.
Sure, for sure. We do as much heating as we do cooling. And it's so we fancy ourselves as technical salespeople. And it really is the case. The majority of my salespeople are engineers. And it's just the understanding of the equipment and the systems and the application of that equipment. We're frequently dealing with engineers, contractors, and you know, people. They're technical devices for the most part, technical equipment. So we look hard for those technical people that think like engineers, act like engineers, not necessarily want to be a designer of something. They want to take those technical skills they have and apply it somewhere else. Sales is a good place for a lot of them to do that. So that's kind of the team that we have.
But what a great model that you're getting people with professional degrees and backgrounds, you know, a very specialized, very hard fought to get type of a degree. You get them in the sales position to help with HVAC heating units. It's got to give you a unique and differentiating type of sales platform that a lot of manufacturer reps in your industry just don't have.
You know, I will say this, it's technical salespeople, that's a hard spot to fill because most people go to engineering school because they think they want to be engineers. And so the awareness that sales is even an avenue that these people can take, I'd say most engineering schools aren't gearing these people to be salesmen. They're gearing them to be engineers. And so it does feel like it's a bit of a finding a needle in a haystack sometimes when we go recruiting and looking for technical people that also have a desire and an aptitude to, you know, have a little salesmanship in them. And so all I know is when we find a good one, we got to latch onto them and keep them because they don't grow on trees.
So here is why I call it In the Queue, again, a play on your nickname, but you start out coming to Kansas City looking for a job. You get a job, you're an employee. A few years later, you become an owner of the business that you're an employee of. And we know ultimately, fast forward today, you're an owner along with some other peoples of a bigger entity. You've basically come, I don't want to blow it out of proportion, say from a hard scrabble existence, but by your own bootstraps, you've come in at the very entry level and now a significant owner of a significant manufacturer rep company, for lack of a better term. But that is not even accurate. Tell us the name now of your combined entities and what you do, because it's evolved from since when I first met you and got to know you.
Yeah, so we have merged with another firm. They're a company called Innovative Technical Solutions, ITS is how they're known in our marketplace. And they also have a sister company by the name of One Power. And we've merged with those folks a year and a half or so ago. they swim in the same pond that we do generally. They're also in the construction industry, largely in the equipment and service industry, in the same industry that we are, more or less, except that they have a specific expertise in certain parts of the market that are very, very unique and niche-y. And those parts of the market that I refer to are the telecom market. And so my new partners at One Power focus on the telecom market. A large part of that is the service piece of that, but it's also equipment sales as well. And then the ITS piece of that business that we've merged with, very, very focused on what I'll call mission critical piece of the market. And really the generic term of that is mostly data centers. And so they represent equipment. They have service skills, very, very specific to data centers, as does One Power, very specific to the telecom industry. So we cover a lot of ground with what we do and what we've done over the years, all of these commercial and industrial markets, but those are unique markets. The barrier to entry on those markets is pretty darn high. The number of players in those markets are pretty darn low. That's what those folks in my new company concentrate on.
Well, it seemed to me as well that from my experience with data centers, they need a lot of cooling.
A lot of cooling. So anything that needs a lot of cooling suddenly piques our interest.
Right.
And the fun thing about data centers is if your house was a data center and you had an air conditioner handling your house, they'd have three of them. Because if one of them failed, they needed a backup. And if another one failed, they needed another backup. So data centers buy a lot of air conditioning equipment.
So what's interesting here, I think there are three ways to grow a business other than organically. Organically, by that, I mean, you just go out and do what you do every day. To grow a business outside of that realm, you either buy assets of a business, you buy the stock of a business, meaning the ownership, stock certificates, or you merge. Many times when people are thinking about advancing their business, they're either going to buy or sell their assets, buy or sell stock, but you went down a different road. You were merging two companies together. Obviously, you could have sold your business to ITS, or they could have bought you, one of the first two ways. But you decided on a merger. My sense is this: you weren't looking to get out of the business. You were looking to expand the business. So what did you see that caused you to think, let's bring these companies together? I'm not buying and you're not selling. Let's work together.
Mm-hmm. So I'm at the point of my career where I kind of see the finish line, but I'm not quite ready to get there just yet. But I'm really at the point of my career where I want to work hard to leave a company that's better than the one I bought. And so it just so happened that when we started talking to the ITS and One Power guys, they were of a like mind. And so the conversations started, you know, casually over beers. And then the next thing you know, somebody decides, man, there may be something here. But by virtue of the fact that we had three guys here that said, if we did something, if we did it right and did this the right way, we're all kind of see the sunset for us, but we could work hard for a handful of years and turn over something that's better than what we had here before we merged. And that feels pretty good from a legacy standpoint, to hand the car keys to somebody and say, you know, when I first drove up, this was a Chevy and now it's a Lexus, and this is a better deal for you.
So really, from the beginning, you always talked about merger. That was the only way to go forward.
It really was. We didn't really discuss, do you want to buy me? Do I want to buy you? We thought that all the companies together were better than ourselves individually. And then we all just basically committed that we've got a handful of years of a heavy lift here to get us to where we need to be. And then we turn it over to the next generation here.
So I think it's pretty obvious from your philosophy and your strategy, and thank you telling us, you know, kind of the long-term aspects of it, why you didn't just sell the company. It is about a legacy. It is about leaving the whole scenario a little bit better than when you first joined McQueeney Group. How long did this process take for you from beginning to end? You know, what should a listener expect?
Yeah, so I'm going to say this. I'm going to say we probably were kind of chit-chatting back and forth about it for 3 or 4 months. And then when we decided, let's get serious and let's go, it was about 6 months. Okay. From the let's start drawing up some paperwork to getting to the finish line. So that's the general timeline, 6 to 9 months there.
You were involved, obviously, in buying McQueeney Group with someone else at one time. How was that experience different than the merger experience?
Yeah, in retrospect, it was in some ways easier, some ways more challenging. I guess the biggest thing that when we bought the company, myself and a partner, the most challenging part of it was I never bought a company before. And so everything was new, of course. And, you know, we really didn't have any angst about whether or not we could run the company and do well. We were pretty comfortable there. We had both worked there for several years, and we felt confident there. But, you know, taking the leap was kind of a big deal for us. You know, being an employee and being the owner, that's a different feel to things, certainly. So that part was more challenging. But the merger ultimately ended up, I think, overall being more challenging for me personally, just because now I've been running a company for a while, and this is the way we do things. And this is kind of what our game plan's been. And even when we found a group of guys at, you know, different companies here that were in the same industry and generally of like mind as we were, everything's different. And so their ideas on how things should have gone and should go were a little bit different than ours. And so at that point, it was like sort of like a marriage, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, your wife wants to do certain things and you want to do certain things, and you sort of work hard to find the compromise. And so there was a lot more of that, certainly in the merger, than there was when we bought the company initially.
As one of my clients would say, when he sold the company, or he bought somebody's company, and maybe the seller stuck around a little bit, and he was getting a little disenchanted, or he was not sure where we were going, he would say to him, "Did you cash the check?" Meaning, right. I understand, but, you know, I wasn't looking going forward. I think, to your point, the challenge of the merger is, you know, somebody isn't departing in favor of someone who is taking over. You've got to figure out how to get along with people and work together. And a lot of times, you know, it takes a long time to get that accomplished. It's not something that's necessarily intuitive, but requires a lot of hand-holding, I guess, for lack of a better term, than anything else. I would think that's probably the biggest challenge, and that might be the biggest difficulty. Would that be fair, or do you...
Yeah.
Let me ask it this way. Do you see, is that the most challenging part, or is there another part that's most challenging for you?
Oh, it's that. So it's those compromises initially, and then it's, you know, honestly, it's ongoing. We've only been merged, you know, less than 2 years here, and we just recently moved into the same building. So before we merged, I had a building, they had a building. Here 3 or 4 months ago, we moved into a common building. So that sort of popped the top on a whole bunch of other things that we figured out. I guess we're going to have to compromise on more things, right? Because suddenly you live together and there are different ways of doing things. And I had a certain way I handled my employees, and they had a certain way they handled their employees. And now suddenly they're all of our employees. Yeah. And so, you know, we're still figuring all that out. We just are. And so that's something that I'm not smart enough to have been able to see down the road, and I didn't have the experience. The integration piece of all of this is I can see that it's just going to take a lot longer than I had really thought it might. And it's not a bad thing. It's just, it is what it is. And I can see where, you know, I could have been disillusioned just on my own thinking, well, we're just going to come together this is sort of, all this stuff's kind of magically happen, and it doesn't work that way. And every day, again, a marriage is the best analogy I can come up with. And you think, well, I'm just going to get married and we're just going to have happily ever after. And then you figure out every day there's a little bit of something you got to work on. And it's a lot like that, I'd say.
So we talked, I don't want to call it lowlights, but it's really the challenges that have been going on. Let's talk about the positives. What have been the benefits, or what have been some of the highlights of the merger? And maybe some of the nuances you go like, wow, you know, I did achieve that, or there's something I didn't see. Or what are some of the things that keep you going down this road with your relationship with ITS et al?
Yeah. So from a business standpoint, we certainly are recognizing the synergies and the cooperation, the benefits of the cooperation that we had anticipated. And in spite of the times we're in, and it, you know, I'd say this, in our business, we supply products to our customers, and we supply, you know, sophisticated pieces of equipment that have all these chips in it that nobody was thinking about, you know, prior to a year ago. So, and all this, you know, steel and copper and aluminum and all this stuff that we can't really get very quickly. So we're definitely, all sides of our business are, it's, you know, the headwinds are strong for us. But in spite of all of that, our ability to collaborate, share leads, share customer contacts and things like that, definitely helping us. And I think it's only going to get better if we ever get back to anything that feels like a normal set of circumstances relative to being able to deliver equipment and take care of customers. But so from a business standpoint, that's been good. And I see a lot more of that in the future. And then personally, you know, I'd say this, when we did the merger, I don't know, I'd probably been doing this, working for this company in one capacity or another for 30 years, you know, and I was ready for something different. So for me personally, not only has it given me the satisfaction of feeling like I helped move my company into a better position for longevity and for continued success, the diversification that we've been able to develop by bringing both companies together helps both sides of the merger without question. So not only was I ready for something personally, just to, because I've been doing the same thing for quite a while, I was ready, there's that level of satisfaction that I could be wrong and time may prove me wrong, but for now, it feels like I've done the right thing for my company and for my employees, and something that I can be proud of to leave them when it's time for me to walk out.
That is huge. So, I mean, congratulations to you. That doesn't always happen with people, but knowing you, I also think that you could go, you know, down the rocky road of business life or personal life and somehow weather the storms. But, you know, congratulations. That doesn't happen to everyone. I imagine that as well, when you're going through the merger, there's what I call a period of deal fatigue where you're just worn out and can't figure. Go ahead.
You saw it on me. You know, here's a downside of the merger for me personally, for us, I think all of us, the disruption to our day-to-day business. And so it had my attention, it had my partner's attention, and we're right in the teeth of COVID. You know, things are hard, things are confusing, things are weird. And so right in the middle of all that, we had, you know, the merger going on. So no question, there were many days that I was thinking, God, I wish this was the last day. Not because I didn't necessarily like what was going on. It just kept me from focusing on the things that were kind of blowing up around me in my day-to-day business.
I think watching you from the outside, you know, when you, there's deal fatigue I find in every deal, because if you're a seller, you want to get out and move on with your life. If you're a buyer, you want to get it over with. You've already got plans and everybody's on down the road. But a merger is different in my experience, because you have deal fatigue, but everybody's sticking around and going to be on the same page. Yeah. And so, you know, it becomes challenging from, you know, from that vantage point in trying to really say to yourself, is this deal fatigue going to continue forever? I mean, is this a preview of coming attractions and it's never going to change? But yeah. I take it it's changed for you, that after you've gotten through the closing, you do see that there's a lot of things to figure out. But that deal fatigue starts slipping away, things improve, and you're able to find a way to hold hands and go together. I don't know if holding hands is the proper term for guys, but I'm using that.
Well, there's a different feel, and I agree, it's better, because certainly there's a lengthy list of integration to-dos that we've gone through and that we still have to deal with. But it just feels different, sort of like if you're building an addition to your house. Yeah, I got to work every weekend and I got to get that stuff done. But you're feeling like it's all for the right purpose, the right reason. And at some point in time, we're going to get to the finish line here. And I'm going to be able to see the fruits of my work here. So there's that, you know, after the deal's over, now it's let's just get to work and build a great company.
So I imagine there are people who know you very well that said, tell me about your experience. Okay. Because I'm looking at the same sort of thing. What do you tell them when they've come to you?
Yeah. So of course, this is my first time doing this. And so in retrospect, And as you know, Dave, we kind of let the ITS guys sort of take the lead on the merger. And that I don't have any heartburn about that issue. I think in retrospect, what we probably could have done is right up front, sort of get everybody together and talk about what's this blueprint look like? What's the pathway from where we're at to where we're going? Give me a crystal clear vision of what that looks like, where the milestones are, and where the roles and responsibilities start and end. And I'd say this, by their side leading charge here, there were a lot of times I kind of felt like we were, on our side, were kind of reactive because we didn't know when they were going to do certain things. And then suddenly it was an emergency and then we didn't hear from them for a while and things like that. So it felt a little disjointed. So I think, you know, if I had to hit the reset button, I'd say, you know what, we're going to carve out a half a day before we even start this thing. And we're going to talk about who's who in the zoo and who's supposed to be doing what and how we're going to get this thing done.
That is very good advice. That's very good advice for anyone to try to sketch all of that out. And I think as, you know, an advisor, you're never really sure of whether or not that's been thought out or not. And a lot of times people say we've got it figured out. But I think in fairness, everybody has it figured out, but they don't have the playbook. Until they have the playbook, they don't know the questions to ask. And maybe that's incumbent more of advisors to say, you know, here are some of the things that need to talk about. I know I put together for you at one time kind of a M&A team of professionals and a list of who does what and the timing. But it sounds like I could even do a better job of maybe laying out in advance some of those conversations or discussions or even hosting them.
Yeah. And so I think we assumed those guys were going to kind of approach it that way. And, you know, I'm not saying they approached it incorrectly. I'm just saying their approach made it feel a little bit choppy.
I think one of the things that I can take away from the conversation with you, great insight, but I've also shared with other people, and that is before you do a deal, you know, go walk around in their shoes, get to know them. Are these the people you want to be with? Do you understand the business? And it takes time. And a lot of times when people are itchy to do a deal, they kind of overlook that. But I know the more time you spend up front and due diligence, and I'm not talking about law, I'm not talking about accounting, I'm just talking about business. Does this make sense? I think it becomes a little bit easier. The struggle is you're still getting to know people. You don't know much about them. There's still going to be, for lack of a better term, awkwardness as you try to figure out how to put it together. So there's just kind of strife, whether you like it or not.
You know, I'd say I had a little bit of anxiety prior to us moving into the same building because I'd been around their company and I've talked to a lot of their employees, but I've never been in the same building with them on a work day. And so we felt like we had this cultural match. I mean, I really felt that way. And I didn't think too much about it when we were still living separately, but when it was time to move in, I gotta be honest, I had these fleeting thoughts of, man, what happens if we can't get along with them? And now what are we going to do? I feel like we're kind of stuck here. So had I known that I was going to maybe have those thoughts, I'm not 100% sure what I would have done to do something up front to help me sort of do that homework. But to your point, if you're going to get married to somebody, it's probably good to make sure you understand that they leave their dirty socks on the bathroom floor, and you're either going to have to be able to live with that or you're not.
From my own experience as an attorney, I've been in three firms, and you know, people will say all attorneys at all law firms are the same, and I'm going like, you know, culturally they're as different as any two people on the face of the earth, and yeah, we're all practicing law, but wow, it's how we practice can be different, and the strategy is different, and the logistics are different, and the execution is different. And what I mean by difference is it may not be miles apart, but it sure seems like inches apart. You know, it could be the distance between here and the sun, so to speak.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you see, now let's talk a little bit about the future going forward. Do you see with this company that the growth is going to be organic? Do you see yourself maybe going out and looking for more acquisition targets? Or have you had that kind of discussion because you're still, you know, trying to figure out how to live with one another?
So I think there's a lot of organic growth opportunity for us, no question. Our geography has grown a little bit due to the merger. And so we now have locations in Oklahoma and Arkansas. Oh, wow. So we have some geography to grow into, should we choose to do that. We certainly can just work hard to optimize our current market. I mean, by no means do we, you know, sell everything there is in our current market. So there's those sorts of opportunities. The deal fatigue thing is amusing because since we've merged, we've had a couple of opportunities to grow through acquisition. And we all looked at each other and said, not yet. we're still a little wore out here. Yeah. So, but we were a little wore out on the deal, but it's more of an admission that we just sort of took a big bite.
Sure.
Here. And why don't we make sure we can chew this up and digest this before we get out over our skis and getting ourselves into trouble, because suddenly we think we're these big M&A guys, you know?
Maybe it would be time to ask you this. What are the two or three big points you would leave for anyone who's looking at expanding their business or getting out of their business to have them think about and consider before they jump into, whether it's, you know, stock, asset, or merger? What, just from a pure business side, emotional side, if nothing else, what are the two or three big things you'd like people to take away from this interview?
You know, I think, and I don't say this with one ounce of judgment toward anybody, but I think a big part of it is the question you ask yourself, why am I running this business? Why do I own this business? Is it for me? Am I just trying to build incredible wealth? And it's what I'm going to do, all the things that I need to do to build my wealth. And it's me first and everything else second. And I'm not saying there's a single thing wrong with that. A lot of this country has been built with that mindset. And so that approach is different than, I think, you know, or is it the organization that comes first? And that to me dictates what moves you might want to make. And the reason I would say that is a merger, for example, if you're in a situation where you've got to be in control, and this is all about building your personal wealth, a merger, I don't know, there's a lot of compromise that might not set real well with you. And that you might be on more of a, I want to buy somebody and grow my company that way and still, you know, make all the decisions, or I want to sell my company and get as much out of it as I can. To me, that's kind of, you got to figure out where you're at in the, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? And I just say that the merger piece of it, there's compromise, and there's, you give up things, maybe you give up some freedoms that you had before, but if it's better for the organization, then you're willing to do it. And so I think that's a big piece of how somebody would want to move forward with growing their company.
Really great, heartfelt, a very deep emotional statement, if I can say that, and very insightful. And watching you through the process, you did model that presentation, that you were doing it what's best for the company and people overall, almost, well, putting them at the same level as you, Q. That's what I saw. And you're right. That's not what everybody's trying to do. And it's not right or wrong. It's just what priorities are. And you know, what you think you need out of your business life. And I'll tell you, I've seen it over and over again. It's all over the board. Everybody's a little bit different with how they look at that particular mm-hmm. question. What's next for you professionally and personally?
So what I want to do is stick around long enough to make sure that we're high and tight, what we got going on here and the big new deal that we've got, and put the pieces in place, train individuals, you know, put the right people in the right spots so that I can, with a clean conscience and no anxiety about whether or not anybody's going to be able to keep going without me, I can walk out of here and feel pretty good about what I'm leaving behind. And so I have no definitive timeline. If that happens in a year, that'd be fine. If it's 4 or 5 years, I can make that work too. You know, there's certainly other things I want to do before I get old and decrepit. And I still want to have a little bit of health and energy and juice to go do it. So I think probably what happens is a little bit of a phase out here, a ramp up somewhere else, doing some other things. And then at some point, they'll forget who I am around here, and they'll be chugging down the tracks without me, and I'll feel real good about that.
But you've, at that point, left a legacy and left a very good company whenever that should happen on down the road. Really, really great thoughts and a different approach. Thank you for sharing that with us. Quentin, share with everyone your website or people could reach you. Certainly, I've known Quentin through this acquisition, and if there was somebody you'd want to work for, it's Quentin. People on. So you may get flooded with a bunch of inquiries. Can I come to work for you? But share the website, again, the name, little information, so that people are interested, they can learn more about McQueenie Group and ITS.
Yeah, so we're McQueenieGroup.com, just so everybody knows. We formed a holding company, a separate holding company. We continue to operate as McQueenie Group under that holding company. ITS continues to operate as ITS under that holding company. One Power continues to operate under One Power. And so we're one company, single ownership, but all three companies have been in the marketplace long enough that we didn't want to lose that recognition and the legacy that we had built to this point. So anyway, so easiest to catch me at queeniegroup.com. And yeah, we're always looking for good people and smart people. And you know, one of the best pieces of business advice, and everybody's heard it, is surround yourself with people that are smarter and better than you are. And that's pretty easy for me to find those people. And we're on a growth pattern. And yeah, just want to get better every day.
Quentin has no ego. And he's not narcissistic. It is about his people. And I've always known that about him. Thanks, Quentin. And again, be sure to learn more about McQueenie Group. You can find them at their website that he just mentioned. And if you're in search of assistance for a merger or some kind of a combination, please go to davidsider.com and schedule a free consultation. And also, please subscribe to our show. Rate it. Leave me a comment on your favorite podcast platform, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We are going to be populating the universe here shortly. Quentin, thank you for your time. To our listeners, I look forward to our next conversation. And like my guest today, hopefully you'll always stay in the queue. Goodbye for now. We will talk to you soon. This podcast is provided for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. So in determining the best course of action for you, you should consult with an attorney on your specific and distinct circumstances.